Because hockey hasn't completely taken over your life yet. Subscribe to podcasts of Hockey Central at Noon through iTunes or your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan, on demand. Put down that salad and man up your lunch hour with the best hockey coverage possible. You're listening to Hockey Central on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
And here we go once again on the air, Hockey Central at Noon. Jeff Merrick for Darren Millard. A huge weekend around the NHL, punctuated by the Washington Capitals once again claiming top spot in the NHL. Minnesota Wild doing some noise as well. The Maple Leafs winning two road games back-to-back, New York and Ottawa, on Friday and Saturday night, respectively. Around the table, Gord Stellick and Colby Armstrong. And gentlemen, before we get to all the action on the ice in the NHL, and there was plenty to get to, we'll talk plenty about the Maple Leafs, talk plenty about the Washington Capitals, preview the five afternoon games and two evening games tonight. But the big story, Colby Armstrong robbed by Brian Boucher in the Pittsburgh Penguins alumni versus Philadelphia Flyers alumni game and a sold-out Wells Fargo, Colby.
Sold out. I was amazed. I thought I was going down for a fun, and it was. It was a fun alumni game. But when I got there, did they put on a show?
Mm-hmm.
It was one of my top hockey moments, guys. I don't know.
Now, how did Eric Johnson use you?
Eddie Johnson used me. Eddie used me. He used me a lot. Like, I kept asking guys, "Is my face purple?" I felt like my head was gonna pop. I haven't played a game in a while, but no, it was quite a thrill. They had all their big guys from every era dressed, and if they weren't dressed, they were there in attendance on the bench, and the crowd was great. They were going wild, and the announcer, in rink announcer, would announce, "Now on the ice, the Legion of Doom."
Did you go up against them?
Yeah, I went up against them. It was awesome.
And?
It was awesome. I don't know. I stayed out of their way. They're big guys, but taking faceoffs against Bobby Clark and playing against all the players,
like?
Great. So it was awesome. It was amazing.
Did he do the old school?
He did the old school, just reach in there. He cleaned me up a couple times, actually. I missed the puck. I got to say, I missed it. and he swatted it back on me. But no, they put on a good show. It was a thrill and ended in a 3-3 tie. So everyone was happy. And
I was going to ask this. So everyone's happy with the tie, or do guys want to play on?
So maybe some guys on our team aren't happy because Eddie started benching guys at the end of the game and putting Ryan Malone, Tyler Kennedy, and myself, because we were the younger guys on the team out there, to keep the game tied, because they had some guys that could still go.
Simon Gagné, Desjardins,
Luke Richardson. Yeah, Simon Gagné, Danny Briere. They had some young guys that could still play and still go. So, and then the Legion of Doom came on the last minute. Let me tell you, that was we had our goalies played well. Tebow at the end was phenomenal, but man, they put on a great show. It was awesome.
Are you the kind of guy that wants autographs and pictures as well? Are you still that hockey fan?
Yeah, I am. I quickly, as soon as the game ended, I went off the ice to go get my phone to get some pictures, and the LCB line was still on the ice. And I quickly ran and got them. They're the only last three guys for the Flyers on the ice. And then I said,
Leafs,
you know,
Barbara Clark.
Yeah, yeah. And I said, you know what? Screw it. I'm going in their dressing room. I went into their room with full equipment, and I went and had to get one with the Legion of Doom as I, you know, watched those guys. I got to play with John LeClair, actually, in Pittsburgh for a year, but I sat down and went right into the room, barged in, and got a picture with those guys. So those will be hanging up. And if I ever get a man cave, Gord, I'll hang them up there.
Any slapshot controversies or anything like that? Any penalty controversies?
No hits, no controversies,
no slashing through the neutral zone. Yeah, Draper Roberts.
No, there was nothing. Cool. One kind of tense moment, Grant Jennings on our team was rewarded a penalty shot.
Yeah.
And I don't think I don't even know if he's ever taken a penalty shot, and talking to him after the game, he's like, oh my God. How long has it been since I played in front of that many people? It's unbelievable. And all eyes are on me. And I'm just thinking, don't trip, don't fall, and just hit the net. So it was hearing some stories and hanging out with some guys and meeting some new guys that I didn't know. And yeah, it was a great experience. All around great experience.
And Tyler Kennedy's not that far removed from the game. He can still bring it, right?
I think he was going to play the start of this year and then decided, I think his back was bothering him and he had some other issues, but decided to hang him up. So he was still good. And he tied the game late with a down the wing snapshot, short side shelf. So gave us some life. The bench started feeling it.
And Colby's an Olympic hopeful, right?
Yeah.
I know. He's hoping NHLers don't go.
I got an assist, so feeling good. Something to build off of.
Now, how did Boucher rob you? I haven't seen it yet.
Oh, I was just, watch it after the show. It was just one of my muffin shots. I think he, He played pretty good. I think all the goalies played pretty good, but I was going high, yeah. And he just kind of like did a windmill arm stab at it and got it. But when I was out for, they had a lot of guys out there and some guys that were pretty big guys like Brown and Karkner and obviously Legion of Doom, ooh. Legion of Doom line. And I was standing there in warm-ups and Frankie LaRue, who's like 6'6", comes up to me as I'm watching all their guys skate around. He goes, "Oh boy, Army, the ice just got a whole lot smaller." Yeah, it was pretty awesome though. It was great.
That's awesome, dude. Glad you had a good time. Yeah, well, the Maple Leafs had a good time as well. Back-to-back games on the road. What a nice little road record for the Toronto Maple Leafs. If you're going to make the playoffs, a number of coaches have always said you need to be 500 on the road. 10-6-6 away from the Air Canada Center. A pair of wins, one against the Rangers on Friday, Ottawa on Saturday. Want to get to the Austin Matthews. A couple of really nice plays, and one led to a Connor Brown goal. But we'll start with the Ranger game. What did you make of, well, back-to-back, I suppose. Back-to-back road wins, Gord.
Yeah, you know, I think they're 9-1-2 in their last 12 road games, so only lost one. They were struggling on the road early on, so sure. That you're right. That's one thing they've turned around that way. It's funny, we chatted with Wendell Clark on Saturday because he's the guy that, was, as a rookie, made the All-Star game, which sure. Was the source of a little bit of debate about was that a good thing or not and his experience. But he also talked about your rookie year when you're making the NHL. He says there's no pressure. He says it's just so much fun. Everything's new. Every road trip's new. Every new restaurant, new whatever. Mm-hmm. And what you're seeing and what you saw Friday, they come back from the break, and it's a bunch of guys, like it's like a college frat house that happen to be having success on the ice, right? It's all going. So they're loosey-goosey, no big contract, all those kinds of things. And I think they've really manifested that quite well as they learn Mike Babcock's system. But also, rather than the rookie who comes up his first game and gets 2 minutes on the fourth line and is squeezing sawdust out of his stick, they're out there just, they know they're going to go back out there if they make a mistake or not. And it's really starting to pay dividends.
Is it like that your first time around? Everything's new. And I mean, after a while, it's a real grind. Everything on the road is a grind. But when you're a rookie, this is all still fresh and fun.
Like I remember my first year coming up, obviously, playing with on a line with Crosby, and our team wasn't very, very good at the start of the year. I think they lost 12 games straight, ended up firing Eddie Olczyk and bringing in
Terry. Did you catch that, by the way? That was they lost, not we lost.
Yeah, before I was there. I was in the minors.
Oh, okay.
Come on.
That's right.
But we still lost a ton of games when I got up there, but I was racking up points, and it was fun flying on planes and playing in great ranks, playing against your heroes and a lot of guys growing up and playing alongside some of them too when I got up there. So,
yeah
to what Gord's saying, I mean, it's kind of easy come, easy go almost. It's like, hey, this is a heck of a party right now. But I don't know. I question like the, is it over? Are they overachieving or are they kind of surprising us more so than it? Because did we really know as far as some of these guys went? Like Marner, I have to admit, even just looking at Marner, I saw him at the Memorial Cup. I was like, oh man, I don't know how this guy's going to play in the NHL. He's he's kind of fast, but he's kind of small. And like he plays a ton of minutes in junior. Like we saw him, he had like a minute and a half shifts in the Memorial Cup. And how's
full
he going
to 2 minutes on power play,
yeah,
Hunter
full,
style.
Full. And it's like, how is this going to, you know, translate? You know, Matthews is playing in Switzerland. What do we got? Yeah, we got pieces and clips of him at world championships and whatnot, but and World Cup, but you never know until you see it. So I don't know, are they overachieving or are they just really good?
I mean, first of all, it's half a season to keep context, right? There's a full season to go. And we see, certainly with the Colorado Avalanche, how things can go south, you know, after a great start like they had. I think, you know, every summer, I can remember you got a lot of time to kill. Well, not as much anymore, but you had a lot of time to kill and you sat around and you do the, I call it HUD if, but what if? And you just imagine everything. And what if this guy can make it this year? What if this guy bounces back? What if this guy can play like we think? All these things, right? And usually whatever percentage comes out. Mm-hmm. I think last year the Leafs probably 10% probably came out, right?
Yeah.
This year, it's like all those exact things you're asking, and they're asking them too. They don't know. I thought it was great last year. Lou Lamoriello via Elliot Friedman kind of challenge Mitch Marner about being ready for the NHL. Remember that about a midseason interview? So all these kind of things, Zaitsev, what would he be like? So they've had pretty well a hit on everything. I don't think there's really been many misses. Plus, they've been healthy. And the big what if, Freddie Anderson can play goal. Because if your goaltending struggling, you can play all that way. But you lose games, you lose confidence, you lose a lot of things. So that's the neat part. They're not overachieving. They're at potential and expectations is being, you know, realized in a way it hasn't for a few years.
And the setup for guys too, hey? Like you watch their team, Jeff.
Yep.
They try some guys are playing third line, checking line. It's like, don't release them now. Don't let them, like Connor Brown. Like don't give them, you know, we'll put them in this position. We'll kind of bring them along. And then once we see, then boom, we'll release him into another opportunity here. And their guys are making the most of it too. Like, you got young kids that are stepping into roles or situations and have experienced two different roles already halfway through the season. And some guys, whether it's down in the bottom six or in the top six with some certain minutes or playing with some better skilled guys or more of a checking responsibility. Mm-hmm. And you're seeing some of their guys do really well in those situations. And they're, yeah, you know, sometimes I think they're getting protected a little bit, and I think that's a smart thing to do. I think the Leafs are handling their guys fairly smart, but at the same time, giving them a little taste, you know?
But the protection part, we were talking about that with certain guys, though, is that, you know, first of all, you're an expert in all the draft. I mean, you are. I mean, knowledge-wise. So, you know,
I just
Freddie,
know it.
But yeah. I mean, Freddie Gauthier, for example, okay, gets drafted in the first round.
Yep.
And mm-hmm. then he's an endless number of, would be a good third line center.
Yep.
You kind of go, can't keep drafting everyone to be third and fourth line. You know, you got to find some core six guys. Well, this year they
found. You know why it happens?
This year they found five of them.
You know, you know why that happens? Because every scout wants to say, my guy made it into the NHL, regardless of where they are.
You're talking about being a third or fourth line.
Right, because you draft the guy, you think, okay, you look at him, you look at the skill set, you look at the body size, you say, well, we're not sure where he's going to fit.
That's my guy.
But my guy made it to the NHL.
But also, that became the reality for them, and a lot of teams, a guy makes it. So at some point, if you're going to get better, you got to get core six guys. And like I said, they got like five of them that can play core six because they're really, they got three lines that there's no definitive one, two, and three. And all of a sudden, it's all on the forwards except for Zaitsev that they added those kind of young players.
You know, that's interesting because one of the things that Brendan Shanahan talked about when he first took over with the Maple Leafs was, from a scouting point of view, we need to start swinging for the fences. Like, we need, to your point, we need to start looking at guys that are going to be home runs for us. And the first one was William Nylander. Yeah. That was the first swing for the fence. And there were a lot of names there. There was Nick Ritchie there. There was a big shooter coming out of the OHL. There was a Nick Ehlers coming out of Halifax, which was a big one as well. And they went out and took Willie Nylander. And how good, first of all, you look great with Austin Matthews. How good does William Nylander now look with Nazem Kadri and Leo Komarov on that second, whatever you want to call it, line?
Oh, I know. And the other, exactly. I mean, you don't have Matthews and Marner playing with each other on the same lines.
No.
And this kind of balance and mix around. And even Babcock kidded earlier when Nylander was on the fourth line, said, we got 13 guys that fit into 12, which I never heard that before. But just, you know, to keep guessing. And then you got some of the veterans. You mentioned Kadri. All of a sudden, these guys said, wait a sec, this was a one-line team before. It was one line, Kessel, JVR, and Bozak. And the team either won by them scoring or the goaltender, which didn't happen often, playing great. And all of a sudden, they're going like, what a country. Look at these guys. Look at these passes. Like, this is awesome.
I think they got kind of like a little three-headed monster thing going with those young guys and, you know, finding a way to get them their time, get them their experience, get them feeling like they belong, which they've shown.
Yeah.
And then they can kind of spread them, trickle them through the lineup of other guys that can they can surround them with that can play.
Okay, hockey guy. I got a hockey guy question for you.
Yeah, sure.
All right. So Saturday night, we see Austin Matthews deliberately lose a faceoff, which leads to the Connor Brown goal. This is not something new in the NHL. Yeah. Ryan Getzlaf has been doing this for years in Anaheim. Whenever he gets out there and there's a fourth line trapped against him or a bottom pairing defense duo out there, he will lose the draw. Forecheck goes on, turnover around the net, and it's a scoring chance.
Yeah.
So we've seen this before. And when things happen in Toronto, it kind of takes a bigger, almost life of its own. So we see that on Saturday. And even Connor Brown is surprised when he scores the goal. I remember talking to one assistant general manager, former now, a couple of years ago, and he was in the Eastern Conference, and he ran an experiment one year, him and another team in the Western Conference, trying to figure out if it's wiser to lose a draw in the offensive zone on a power play or win it.
Yeah.
The logic being, if you lose the draw, the puck goes back. It's around the net. If you can force a turnover there, you're in a greater position to score a goal or get a scoring opportunity as opposed to winning the puck back, getting it back to the point, at which point everybody collapses towards the net, and you have five bodies between your puck and that net. Now, good luck finding a coach that's going to tell a centerman on a power play, go lose the draw, but it does make a lot of sense.
You know, I've been in situations where the centermen say, like, I'm going to let him take this one in the corner, just be ready to jump, and you have guys that are on the program. I can see how that would work percentage-wise, when you talk about percentage-wise with scoring chances.
Yeah.
Anytime you can get a team to spread out and open up, the numbers go up for you, I think, in attacking and creating a scoring chance. So when you lose the draw, what does the inside winger do in front of the net? Instead of going out to his point man in perfect position, where if they won the draw, that's what he would do.
Yeah.
He rockets over to the far side of the ice for the rim around or the tip out in your one-on-one at top of the circles or hopefully near the blue line to get it out of the zone, or the guy can rifle it out. So anytime you can get a guy moving that far to position and gain gain control and attack. It opens up that much more of the ice. So in theory, it's smart, but I don't see it happening too often. Most times you'd like to win that and get complete control of a puck. But I mean, if you're ready for it and you can pull it off every once in a while, almost like a seek attack, that's when you want to do it.
Well, plus he told Connor Brown about doing it as well. So it involves the other members of the team as well.
Okay, let's ask the head coach about it. He is the head coach of the Minnesota Wild, 8-1-1 in their last 10, four wins in a row, 17 wins their last 19 games. Holy smokes, Bruce Boudreau. Your team is on fire. Good afternoon, Gabby. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks. It's been sort of scratch your head time. Every game that we seem to be having some success, it's like, how'd we do that? That was pretty good.
Well, it helps having a goaltender who may just win the goalie of the year, and mobile defense and some timely goal scoring and a rejuvenated Eric Staal. We were just talking before he came on about faceoffs, and we saw Austin Matthews deliberately lose one to gain better ice position on Saturday. Getzlaff has done this. Well, you were his coach for years in Anaheim, deliberately lose a draw. Forecheck is on, force a turnover. Have you ever told a centerman to deliberately lose a faceoff to gain better position?
No, but I've shown faceoff plays that if you lose it, what you can do. But the whole thing is that all five guys on the ice have to know what you're doing if you're going to lose the faceoff, and that way you get a jump on it to go after it in the corners or wherever it may be. But if the center's just doing it by himself, then usually it's not going to work out. So everybody has to know, especially your wingers.
When you were in Anaheim and you would see Ryan Getzlaff, I remember he used to chew up, Ryan Nugent-Hopkins line all the time in Edmonton, and he would come back to the bench. Would you ever say anything? What'd you think when you would see that? Because Getzlaff wouldn't even try to win the thing, wouldn't even wave at the puck.
Well, I mean, I never said anything to him. I mean, during the course of a game, we might have talked about it after a game, but again, the wingers knew if he was losing the faceoff, they were jumping and getting in on the defense, and they'd seen something earlier that maybe the defense weren't quick on the draw or something, and the puck was deep, and we were winning the battles. Like with Getzy's line, usually it was big and strong, and if the puck was in the corner, if they lost the faceoff, then they would just out-muscle guys and get the puck back. But I mean, I always tell my centerman, you're the boss out there. You do what you want to do. Just make sure you have a plan.
I thought it was interesting. If you want to call it the perils of winning, Bruce, it was listening to you post game last night. I mean, you come back in Chicago, the Blackhawks are up 2-0. You win the game. As Jeff said, you're 17-1-1 in your past 19 games. So someone asked you a question, like, are you surprised your team was able to cut? And you kind of said, well, that's what they're supposed to do. Like, I mean, it's like when you're losing, you can come up more things. But really, it's kind of a ride. And what the hell do you expect? That's what they're supposed to do, and they're doing it. It's that simple.
Well, I mean, it sounds that simple. It was scary. I mean, they kept talking about how mad they were after the Washington game, and that they'd had a whole battle practice the day before. And I'm going, geez, we're playing 3-4, and it's a long trip from Dallas. We're going to get killed. But our guys have got some really good resiliency, and the one thing about when you go 17-1-1, you never think you're out of it. And especially with our team this year, I don't know how the last 41 games are going to go, but we've only lost two games by more than one goal. So we have been in all the games. And so when you believe that you can always come back, there's a good chance you can do it.
Yeah, that was going to be my question about the belief system in this team. Because, you come back and you've got guys that are spreading scoring around. You're getting scoring from almost everyone on any given night can get one for you guys for a boost. But then you look at your goaltender and the way he's playing. And I just think coming into this year, kind of what was your expectation with this group when you don't have like an Ovechkin or a Perry Getzlaff and you've got this mash of players?
It was new to me that we didn't have the one dominant offensive player. I'd been lucky to have Perry and Getzlaff and Ovechkin and Backstrom in the 9 years that I'd coached, and they had a great supporting cast. Here was going to be all about team, and if we could buy in that we're winning as a team. And I think one of the things we said early on, that nobody on this team is going to win the scoring championship, so who cares who scores? It's all about winning, and everybody just banded together. And, you know, we've had a lot of different line combinations, but we start to find some pretty good chemistry on most of them. And like you said, every night somebody different is doing it. Last night, Stewart scores a goal, and he scored a goal the night before. And then some nights Stahl's line is really good, and Koivu's line, and Niederreiter got a goal last night, and the third line guy. So, I mean, we're getting it from everywhere. But, you know, if we have any stars, it's on defense. I think Spurgeon and Suter don't get anywhere near the credit that they deserve. They play 25 minutes a night against every big line, and they're like 1-2 or something in the league and plus minus. So They've been fabulous for us.
Bruce Boudreau joins us, head coach of the Minnesota Wild, 17 of the last 19 in a positive fashion for the Minnesota Wild. One other player that I'm curious about, because whenever I watch him internationally, generally he's one of the best players on the ice, and you're waiting to see that translate in the NHL. How do you get the most out of Michael Granlund?
You know what? He is so skilled. He sees he can make every play. I mean, when you watch the World Cup, he was Finland's best player, I thought, this year. And if he has a problem, is he thinks he can make every play, and he sometimes gets in trouble being too cute. But he can skate. He's not afraid to get involved in the play. He can make the tremendous play. And he's very responsible defensively. That's a hard combination to find, but he's probably going to start getting a little more recognition now.
Bruce, years ago, a guy who coached you, Doug Carpenter, was typical of coaches, said, I got my players out every day. Every day I want the players on the ice regardless. And you just referred to the schedule, the travel. John Tortorella's a guy who's brought up the whole thing about maybe not having day of game skates as much. And I'm curious, even in the last year or 3, 4, 5, have you evolved that way at all, changed your thought process about that?
I think rest is a weapon. I mean, we haven't practiced much in the last 2 weeks at all, and especially when some of your players are in your 30s and we've got a really tough schedule coming up to us. I've given maintenance days, especially to Suter, Parisi, Pominville, Stahl, and Koivu on a regular basis, just because we need to keep them fresh, and they play a lot of hockey for us. So but every now and again, we do need to practice. I mean, you can forget about some of your responsibilities, and you need to get back there and sharpen your skills a lot.
Yeah, I love that. I think I could have played for you, Bruce.
Yeah, all morning skates are optional.
So. There it is, exactly. I just look at your team, and I watched you guys earlier in the year, and I was like, man, Minnesota's a tough team to play against. Like, I think at the end of a game, when you leave playing against the Wild, you knew you played them, play a hard game, and you don't go through this run you guys are on. As a coach, what's it like for you? Do you trust this group, the belief system, or is it every day, you know, you're kind of, okay, guys, you don't have to poke them and prod them or work them over, or is it just like a finely tuned machine right now?
No, I think you poke and prod all the time, but they do believe, but I mean, you can't let things slide, in my mind anyway. The minute you start thinking things are really good, then all of a sudden something goes bad. I always try to think of myself as Lou Holtz, and I don't know if you know this football analogy, but every team Notre Dame used to play when Lou Holtz was there was the greatest team in the world. And you have to find reasons why they were great to get your team up for that game, no matter whether Notre Dame was playing a high school team. It didn't matter. That high school team was the greatest in the land. And that's sort of the thing we do here is we find all the good points of every team we're playing, and that if we're not ready, that this team is going to beat you, and we try to use that against them.
You're a guy, you love the hockey environments, and I know in Washington you were a part where it became a hockey environment. There used to be a Landover, Maryland, and then downtown, and it just kicks butt there. Anaheim, I know Brian Burke said the same thing. It's just kind of nondescript a little bit out there, and there's a lot of things going on and not a traditional hockey market. What's it like being an NHL head coach in Minnesota, in St. Paul?
Well, it's funny. It's a little different, but you're indoors all the time in your house wrapped in a blanket because it's 40 below, so you don't see anybody. In Anaheim, at least you're out on the streets. In Washington, it's a little different as well, but it's pretty chilly here. But it is a hockey mad place. If you're going out to eat, there's always people that come up to you and talk to you. And the one thing that I've found out is they have a lot of people that travel and come to road games. We see a lot of Minnesota Wild jerseys in the audience and walking around the hotels. So I mean, there's they're quite fervent about their hockey.
Bruce, I want to end by talking about Jared Spurgeon a little bit. Colby and I do a lot of games at night, and whenever Minnesota's on, I'm always gushing about number 46. And I think Colby's probably sick of hearing me talk about Jared Spurgeon. So let's hear it from more of an authority and more of a legit voice on Jared Spurgeon. Why should Colby Armstrong pay attention to Jared Spurgeon, Bruce?
Because he's a genius. We were just talking about him. Scott Stevens called him Einstein on the ice. And whoever he plays with, he makes them better. I mean, for a guy, when I first came into camp and saw a 5'7", 160-pound player, and people would tell me that this guy was really good, I was having a hard time saying, man, he's so small, he's going to get killed. But he's fast. He's extremely smart. He's always in position. And he's not afraid. I mean, and him and Ryan Suter make a great combination. That's why they can both play 25 minutes and above each night.
You believe me now, Colby?
I do. And okay. You know what? Bruce is locked up in his house. The winters are cold, but I have a feeling come the spring and the playoffs, I think his buddy John Anderson will have him out on the boats there. They got so many lakes in Minnesota. I know he likes boating, so you'll be looking forward to that.
Hey, Colby, I got to tell you before we go, and he's in the next room watching this on TV, between him and Darby and Scott, who are all outdoorsmen, boaters, hunters, fishermen, and I couldn't care less about that stuff. There's no chance. They tried to talk me into buying a pontoon boat the other day at a boat show, and there wasn't a chance in hell that was happening.
That's the best.
Coaching
Bruce,
money.
Always appreciate your time. Continued success. It's gone great the first half of the season. Keep it rolling, Bruce.
Thanks, guys. We'll talk to you soon.
Bruce Boudreaux is the head coach of the Minnesota Wild, the top team in the Western Conference, and that's a team you tweaked too early, Colby, this year.
Yeah, I kind of thought, watching, I got to watch them in Pittsburgh, living there and going to games, and they played them a few times early in the season. They blew them out one game in Minnesota, but the one game in Pittsburgh was just, if you're a defenseman, you know you're playing the Minnesota Wild at the end of the game. You're like, man, because they can cycle, they can wear you down. They come at you in waves. It's a tough team to play against. And then when they have players that can play 30 minutes like Spurgeon and Suter, and then you have a goalie like Dubnyk, it's like, how do you get away from these guys? Almost all game, how do you get away from them?
I like at the end, though, Bruce said, who was the guy that used to get the fishing show? He'd get, like, Ted Williams up there. Remember that? Like, all these great players, Scuttlebutt Lodge or something like that?
Oh, yeah.
It wasn't Red Fisher. I mean, Red Fisher's the writer, but Red, anyway. But he'd get, it'd be amazing the people he would pull out, you know, that would just, like, Ted Williams would go up there on a yearly basis. So sounds like Bruce Boudreaux will not be one of those guys.
You ever go boarding trip with your old coach from Atlanta, John Anderson?
He did. He took us, actually. It was his setup. He did a thing every year with like a pig roast or like a barbecue, whatever you'd call it, in Atlanta. And he took us out to Lake Lanier, just outside of Atlanta, and got the boat for us, took us a tour around the lake. He liked to go out there on his own every once in a while and go boating. But he liked to fix up old boats, buy a used boat, an old boat, and kind of tinker with it and fix it up. So big boater, big fisherman, big outdoors guy.
That's what they did with Eric Staal.
Trying to convince us to fix up old boats.
That's what Fletcher did. Very good. Nice little segue. On that, we'll wrap up, come back to you with the three stars this week from the NHL. And the Washington Capitals looking for their 10th win in a row. Mm-hmm. They face off against the Chris Letangless. Yes, he's back on the IR, or injured, rather. Chris Letangless, Pittsburgh Penguins. A nod and respect to all of our neighbors stateside celebrating Martin Luther King Day. Hockey Central at noon returns on Sportsnet 590, the Fan simulcast on the NHL Network.
A podcast that casts a wide net across the internet of sports. The Andrew Walker Show. Subscribe in iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590, the Fan. On demand. Now, more Hockey Central on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Welcome back to the program, Hockey Central at noon. Jeff Merrick for Darren Millard around the table, Gord Stellick and Colby Armstrong. Here are your NHL three stars of the week. Star number one, you can watch him in action tonight against the Pittsburgh Penguins. It is Nicklas Backstrom, the Washington Capitals, celebrating career assist number 500. That's tops Caps history, I believe it is. Thank you.
Got a gold stick for it.
Very nice.
Mm-hmm.
Brad Marchand, your guy, Colby.
Yeah.
5 points against Philadelphia Flyers.
Yeah, 5 points again.
500th NHL game that he did it in.
Yeah.
They were both in the, if you go back, both Brad Marchand and Nicklas Backstrom in that 2006 draft.
Yeah.
Right, that had Kessel, Jordan Staal, Eric Johnson, who else in there? Kyle Okposo was in that draft, Brian Little. Nicklas Backstrom, the most points of anyone in that draft.
Mm-hmm.
And probably, and should have probably won a Selke trophy or two somewhere along the way when you look at the careers. Brock McGinn as well. On your morning show this morning, you were talking about Brock McGinn of the Carolina Hurricanes, and for good reason. He's star number three. Why do you like Brock McGinn this week?
Well, you know, the Carolina Hurricanes are kind of, hey, just keep it quiet. We're coming back. We're kicking butt. Like, no one's talking about them, right? Nobody's talking about them. And here they've kind of retooled to a degree. And then this is exactly the kind of guy you're hoping that can hit. When I said you do the what-ifs over the summer, a guy, a second-round pick, playing in Charlotte in the American Hockey League mostly, and you give him, you know, a chance to play, assimilate him on the team. He had, what, 2 goals, I think, in his first 25 games this season. And then he comes out with three goals, 2 assists in the 2 games on the weekend. 2 big wins for them. So just that kind of thing, about, I mean, like the Leafs are doing or other teams when you develop a young guy. And, you know, that could be a watershed weekend for a guy to get the feel that, yeah, I belong in the National Hockey League.
Jeff, you talk about the Carolina Hurricanes all the time.
I know, all the time.
I'll give you credit for that. You always do.
They had they had that terrible road streak to kick off the season, right? 6 games on the road, and it was death for Carolina. They're just now sort of digging themselves out from what that was. I talked to someone on the Hurricanes beginning of the season. I said, you know, Sportsnet.ca, we did these, you know, predictions and rankings and all that. And one of the questions was, what team do you think will surprise us based on expectations? I said Carolina. Just had that feeling about the Carolina Hurricanes. The blue line is outstanding. You know, they're going to put, you know, the three centerman line together. You thought that, you know, Sebastian Aho was going to be a big deal. He's turned out to be a big deal.
Skinner's back.
Skinner's been fantastic. Yeah. You get pops from a guy like McGinn. And I think very, but quietly, Jacob Slavin becoming the best defenseman on that team, period. Justin Falk gets all the headlines, but Slavin's been their best guy. I mean, I love...
You could go on and on.
1 point out of a playoff spot, chasing the Philadelphia Flyers for a wild card, 3 games in hand.
Yeah.
And, Carolina. You know, and Eric Staal had more in the tank. He's doing with Minnesota. And Cam Ward had more in the tank, right? They're paying him half what he was. I mean, the goaltending
has been okay. Like a .915 save percentage, that's...
Well, good enough.
Okay.
Whatever. Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, that's...
And based on Cam Ward's
goalies,
expectations...
Hey, goalies, come on.
Oh, yeah, I know.
That's why I was going to say the three stars, no goalies this
week.
That's
why you like it.
Yeah, I was like, yeah, goals, points.
There were a lot last week,
yeah.
You want to gush more about the Carolina Hurricanes? You want to do some Washington Capitals talk?
Well, okay, Washington Capitals, 9 wins in a row. They've outshot their opponents 40-11. That's like a 4-1 margin. Last six games have not given up an even strength goal.
Yeah.
Like, that's...
The 259 minutes of no goals, 5-on-5. The last 5-on-5 goal was scored by... Frederick Gauthier against Washington.
Oh, wow.
The last 5-on-5 goal against Washington.
You literally, you have to score 3 goals to try to beat these guys, but they, like, you know, you look at the team and everyone goes, what's going on right now? What, you know, Columbus stole everybody's chatter all year.
Totally.
So they've been good, and they've got the
same. Who ended the streak, by the way? For Columbus.
Yeah, these fellas.
Washington Capitals.
Yeah.
But you know, you talked about Backstrom maybe should have won a Selke trophy. They got to get someone who wins the Conn Smythe trophy. Mm-hmm. That's the point. And again, we talk about it every year, right? It's the same old thing that way. And you wonder, does this prepare them any better? Mm-hmm. I don't know. Like, I don't know what else you can do. Like, you can't, you won the President's Trophy. You won it like 7 years ago, right, or whatever number of years ago. And how much
2010,
jacked?
Remember? That opening round, Washington and Montreal. Oh, Washington and three.
Hey, and as good as they've been this year, they've done it pretty quietly. Like, I know that a lot of teams went on some other streaks. But if you watch them play, I don't think they've turned it up yet either, which is scary if you watch them play.
They've dismantled the Flyers 5 Cobb yesterday.
They played Montreal there a while ago. Ovechkin was chasing down the Rocket.
Yeah.
I mean, they were having kind of a sleepy game. He gets a goal and 2 assists. They win. It's It's, I don't know, it's kind of scary to see what they're doing.
Is this Washington's last chance? When you look at, you know, TJ Oshie's going to be unrestricted. Carl Alsner is going to be unrestricted.
Man, Oshie's good for
them. There's an expansion draft coming, and how do you keep Dmitry Orlov? Is this their last shot at it?
No. No. I mean, you've still got the big guns, and you've got them under contract. You've got the excellent goaltender. I mean, even the other night, Tom Wilson got three. We got three points, I think, one game. So all of a sudden, some of these former first-round pick that you now say, okay, he's been a tough guy, but maybe let's see if we can get a little bit more scoring.
Yeah,
and that's part of getting ready down the road, the departure of certain guys. I mean, the Stanley Cup winners always have to do it certain ways, and you got to manage it. And just as you lose a cog, you got to hope the next Kuznetsov or somebody else is on the horizon. That's what they've done really successfully.
And they'll need, because we talk about, you know, you need a Conn Smythe Trophy winner. You need to have Kuznetsov going in the playoffs. Like, that's the one of the things. One of the things we saw last year. I know that they ran into the hot goaltender, and you know Matt Murray was a buzzsaw last year for the Pittsburgh Penguins, and it derailed the Washington Capitals. But a couple of interesting quiet things as well. I'm not the only one to have noticed this, but Matt Niskanen's having a Norris-type type season, guys.
Two goals.
Matt
the other
Niskanen
night,
is having an outstanding season with Washington, and even though it was his goal yesterday, how about that Ovechkin pass? Everybody in the world, okay, everyone in the rink. Steve Mason, all the fans, everybody watching on television thinks Ovechkin is taking that shot because we've seen it 1,000 times before.
The crazy thing, I think Mason might have stopped it, believe it or not. Like, you know, like he looked to be like perfectly there. And then if you just watch him alone on the clip and not the beautiful pass, he's on his knees and he's trying to get big, but... you got to think maybe he might have closed his eyes because I don't know, because he's like down and he's like straight up big, and then he just keeps going into the corner as this nice little pass comes across. But man, what a play.
That
nice
may
play.
Have been the play of the weekend. There were a couple of beauties. Travis Ajak's back check.
Yeah, that was awesome.
The Taylor Hall goal. That was spectacular.
Yeah.
But to me, that pass that Ovechkin makes to Niskanen yesterday.
I'll tell you another little play. I really enjoyed the you know, behind the scenes stuff 2 years ago, the road to the Winter Classic with Barry Trotz, first year coach of Washington. And I just think that overtime play, Jay Beagle, who's playing well, right?
Yeah, sure
so
is.
He comes out, wins against Toronto, wins the draw. So his ice time in overtime is like 2 seconds because he wins it and bolts right over there off the ice. Enter Alex Ovechkin.
Yeah.
Possession of the puck never diverts from the Washington Capitals, and they score in the first 20 seconds. But, I mean, we talked about planned plays, about losing a faceoff on purpose. That here you're putting a guy specifically for that 5 seconds. He does it, wins it back, get the other guy out in motion, and you get a goal. I mean, those kinds of little details and difference makers, I just love that way of thinking and love that way of executing. And, you know, that's what could be a difference maker to get where they've never got to in the playoffs.
Yeah, they've got their pieces of guys that do their job and do their job well. You need guys to get points. They've got it. You need guys to battle and check. You know, they've got Beagle and guys like Wilson, and they've got those guys on the back end too. So, everyone says, are they peaking too soon? What are they peaking?
Stop
when
it.
Are they peaking?
Stop. What do you want to start
They're
losing?
They're playing. Yeah.
Shots. Like, okay, guys, that's enough. We're peak pet peeve.
You know, one thing I would say.
Stop saying, are you peaking too soon?
Last year, the Penguins kind of down the stretch. I feel like they were kind of in the heads of the Capitals, and we see them face them in the playoffs in the second round, and what was going to happen here. But I feel like it was almost like the Penguins had them before the series started, and now we see them march all over the Penguins the last game, and they play them again tonight, and the Penguins have lost 3 in a row. But you know, through the year, you look at them and you think about that mental warfare of a team that just gets in your head, and I think. You know, the Penguins have to be careful maybe about a team believing that, hey, guess what, we can really beat you when it counts. So I mean, the game tonight's pretty big, I think, for both these teams. Like the Caps to keep their foot on them, or for them to start thinking, down the stretch here,
And Noah Letang, that's huge.
And Noah Letang, and no Dumoulin still,
And we haven't even mentioned Hopi.
We mentioned him a little bit, didn't we?
No, I don't think so.
Well, how about Grubauer getting one of the shutouts as well?
Last night.
So a little bit of...
What's he, 8-1 in his starts, I think he is?
And that's kind of what you need too, right? Like you can't... God bless, you know, Braden Holtby yesterday chasing Martin Brodeur's win record. And I won every game. But I mean, if you're going to be successful, I mean, isn't that one of the things we've learned? I mean, the Maple Leafs, you know, went out and picked up Curtis McElhinney.
Yeah.
Just to have someone that can stand in front of a shot with some type of credibility. Like you need a backup goaltender. You need to spell Holtby off. You can't have him playing 75 games.
Well, and it's part of, like, they have everything in place. You know, the Pittsburgh Penguins had everything in place the year they didn't win the Cup, when Sidney Crosby came back. Remember that year they got on a tear and didn't? And it seems like every year, and that's what the Pittsburgh Penguins were again the second half last year. That's what the Washington Capitals are right now. Mm-hmm. But maybe the Tampa Bay Lightning have a chance to be that game 83. I mean, that's where you got to have all these kind of, and including the goaltending, because that was a bit of an Achilles heel years ago till there was Braden Holtby in the building about, you know, running into Yaroslav Halak, who just plain and simple stole a playoff series when you probably had as good a team as you ever had.
Yeah. I think a lot goes with it too with these teams, and I think it's maybe just a little too easy for Washington all year last year. You know, they ran away, and when you're actually in a tough game, learning how to win tough games and learning how to win those greasy hard ones, that can separate you when you're not used to.
Players say that all the time. What does it mean, though?
Learning, when you're not used to being in a battle and you're used to playing a skating up and down game and you're not used to your back against the wall and digging in deep, sometimes you don't know how to react to it. And, you know, when you're a group and a team, like, who do you look to in a tough situation when you've never had one or your team's that good? Sometimes it can be tough. So, I think that's, you know, something that teams kind of learn through certain parts of the season. But I don't know if Washington seemed to run pretty smoothly last year. So this year, much the same, but they seem to be doing it in a lot easier fashion. That's weird.
Well, early in the year, I know the around the team, they weren't happy about their play, a little bit indifferent. So, but certainly, the last while, what can you say? Perfect.
It's been great. And they'll face off against Pittsburgh Penguins later on this evening. One of a couple of games on the go around the NHL in the evening is Oilers and Coyotes.
Tampa's got a big one in L.A.
Tampa's got a huge one in Los Angeles today. Tampa begins a road trip. I want to say six games or four games.
Six.
Anyway, six-game road trip starting out west with the Los Angeles Kings, led by Jeff Carter, who just puts his pants on every morning and scores goals. That's what the guy does.
Yeah.
Hey, the six-game road trips, do they end next year now that the circus is closing? I don't know. I always assume
that's right.
After 140 years, I never understood six-game road trips, except the circus came to town and you had all that crap on there and you had to get rid of it. I don't know. Never made sense. So anyway, that's a challenge for the Tampa Bay Lightning in a big way.
Well, when you look at the Atlantic, I mean, the reason why we're talking about the Maple Leafs being in there and Boston still hanging is because Tampa's bowed out.
Like, that's
opened the door for everybody.
No, they really have. They've it's been a quieter one. Right. And then just there. And every time you think they're going to right the ship, they haven't. Really been killed by injuries, but they don't use it as an excuse. And then when the goaltender Bishop was hurt, Vasilevsky didn't play great.
Didn't grab
either,
it.
You know, like Murray did last year. He didn't pull the Matt Murray this year that way. So you still got to think that's about a team nobody wants to play in the playoffs. Okay, but you wonder, is there an outside chance that they are one of those teams that you go, wow, they didn't make the playoffs. They ran out of turf.
Yeah. They're a team that I think if they can buy themselves enough time and still kind of hang in there, you know, I think they've had to deal with some young guys that aren't quite ready to be there due to the injuries. Good for them, I guess, to get that experience. But they're a team that I think you watch them and you see the way they can play, how they're structured they are. Tough to play against. They're a team that if they can buy enough time to kind of right this ship and
just
maybe
hang around.
The right time, I think they could be a team that could be scary. So I don't know. We'll see if they run out of time.
Habs and Red Wings this afternoon, 3 o'clock Eastern. Anybody have a theory on Carey Price?
Oh, boy. I think it's 24-hour media. We slice and dice.
It's been a while, though.
I know.
It's not as if it's like, well, okay, he threw a couple of clunkers. It's kind of been, you know, more than a week here with Carey Price.
Well, you know, they won on Saturday, and it's a kid who gets A-plus all the time, just getting A or something like that. I don't know. The minutiae of it all, I get, is he tired? Probably the mental part of the season. Maybe I'll go with that.
Yeah.
Otherwise, he could be on my team any day, any time. After a 7-1 loss, I don't care. Bring him in.
Yeah, and I love his line, how he wanted to stay in there with his teammates. That, you know, when he made that line, hey, none of them can get pulled out of the game. You know,
which
I'd rather.
True, actually, they can.
It's called
getting benched.
Yeah,
but
it happens lots, Carey.
It's not as visual, though. It's not as visual.
No, I love that, and I played with him, and he's obviously great. But that attitude is, I think also another thing that separates him too. So
it is all right. On that, we'll wrap things up. Thanks so much for joining us. Thanks to Boost Boudreau for stopping by as well. Won't be on any boat trips anytime soon with John Anderson and the boys there in Minnesota. They've got a good thing going there with the Wild. Thanks for joining us. Back tomorrow with more Hockey Central at noon. Have a great day.